Mafia Podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a brand new episode of the Long Coat Mafia Podcast. I am the main host and frontman for the show, the Reverend Godfather, and I'm here to bring you this week the first panel episode taken from the Winter Pop and Comic Wonderland Convention this past 3rd and 4th from Waynesboro, Pennsylvania. It is the Star Wars panel hosted by comicbook.com's own Aaron Clutter. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing his name correctly. And on his panel, he had John Martin from Empire Strikes Back, Nalini Christhan from Attack of the Clones, and Felix Silla from Return of the Jedi. That's right. This is their panel, and it's in lieu of the Star Wars panel that is coming up this year, December. So, I'm going to end it here and let them take over. See you guys on the flip.
All right, well, I'm Aaron Clutter. I'm with comicbook.com. We're a website. We do reviews for movies, games, TV, comics, all kinds of stuff. And Matt asked me to moderate our Star Wars panel today. So we have some awesome guests, and I'm sorry, I had my list here that just went away. John Morton, who was in Empire Strikes Back, Nalini Krishan from Attack of the Clones, and Felix Silla from Return of the Jedi. So we're going to talk with them today about their experiences with the Star Wars movies. With that, I mean, it's, you know, an awesome franchise, you guys know. And just talk, right?
All right, start.
Well, I want Felix to tell us about Indiana Jones, because...
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
We're not, okay, we don't need these, right?
Well, you can talk into them, we're recording through them, so, yeah. Yeah, there's just not speakers out for everybody.
Oh.
Remember that guy?
Okay. Okay, we're talking about Indiana Jones, right?
Yeah. Well, if everybody's...
You don't want to know anything about Star Wars. Yes, I was on Indiana Jones, and I double shot around for about 5 months, all through the film. And I got to travel from California to Hong Kong, Hong Kong to India, India to London, London back to California and back to London, many back and forth. So I got to do a lot of stunts for the kid and whatever. Anytime you see him on a film, it was me doing the work. Actually, they hired me before they hired the kid. I went to Hong Kong. I was in Hong Kong. And somebody says, oh, Felix is a little bit too short by this much. We need to put some lifts on his shoes. So Spielberg said, no, we're not going to do that because I don't want him to run around and break his ankles or whatever. We don't see him that very close. Because, you know, when you do stunt work, if you see it really close, and then they might as well use the real actor, in which you never close the camera. Or you're walking, you know, looking somewhere else. So you never see your face or whatever. So the fun part was we got a friend of mine called me from Hong Kong, and he said, how's your passport? I said, well, why? What do you want to know? Where are you calling from? Oh, I'm in Hong Kong, and I want to know how your passport is, if it's, okay to fly, to travel. I said, yes, it is. Can you come to Hong Kong by tomorrow night or the next day, whatever? I said, my God, I mean, you know, give me some time. Let me pack, you know. So I went from L.A. to Hong Kong, and we just started working in the town that we did the scene with the car. The guy jumped out again, landed in the car, he took off, whatever. So I was supposed to dub a little kid. And from London, we went to England. England, we were there for about 3 months. We worked, and then we went to back in California. The reason we went back and forth, because Harrison Ford, he hurt himself doing some stunt work. Actually, it was not a stunt work. It was a training. One of the guys by the name of Buddy by Jake. I don't know if you... He had his exercise to let all these people do an exercise at the studio. And Harrison Ford hurt his back, so... They sent him back home to California for a special doctor to take care of his problem. So, and then we did all the second unit. And the fun part was, I'm not a swimmer. I did a scene on a raft, and the raft flipped upside down, and I got stuck underneath. And I said, what should I do? Should I let it loose or let it go? Because I was under there, and I'm waiting for somebody to get me out. Because I told the stunt coordinator, I said, look, I'm not a swimmer. He said to me, if anything happened, just pull this thing, the Mae West jacket, whatever. He says, if anything happened, just pull on the string, and nothing is going to happen. Don't panic. I say, okay. So he flips over, and I'm under the raft, and I couldn't figure out what to do. Should I let her loose or hang on? So I just stayed in, hoping that somebody got me out of the water in the river. Because the temperature in the water was 50 degrees. Outside it was 105. And every time I went in the water, my mouth is going like this because it was so cold. So anyway, they got me out. But there was the thing about Indiana Jones. So I think you heard that before, right?
But they haven't.
Yes, I know they haven't. I know they haven't. I hope you enjoyed the Indiana Jones thing. And every night for 6 months after that, I kept getting dreams. Like I'm drowning. So there was a little kind of scary situation. So that's Indiana Jones. But I've done other things. I played the Ewok on, the glider on Return of the Jedi, and Adam's Family, and Buck Rogers, and whatever. I did the original Star Trek pilot. And I've been around for a few days, so. Only a few days. A lot of people come to my table and say, man, you got a lot of nice things. So, yeah, I only did this in 1 week. Anyway. You want
to? Well, I don't know.
Tell them a few things about yourself. I know you've done a lot of things.
I'm really a fanboy, so this is the first time we've had a chance to work with Noemi, so I want to find out what it was like with Samuel L. Jackson. And also, I looked at your photo number 9, and you look like you're pretty awesome with a lightsaber. How did you learn how to do all that stuff?
Well, I didn't really have too much training before the film for the lightsaber fight. I worked with Nick Gillard, who was the main stunt coordinator from episode 1, 2, and 3. And, it was very kind of hit and miss. It was all very spontaneous, and it was a lot of improv. So he would think of this really brilliant technique and this sequence. And then we would train, then we would film, and then we would laugh. And then, because he couldn't take any of the females seriously because we were a bit too girly. So we'd practice again, we'd do another sequence, and then we would film. So pretty much did that until we got it right because none of us had really sort of yielded a lightsaber. I mean, I've done martial arts, but I haven't done anything, quite as exquisite as using a lightsaber before. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And and the lightsabers were very heavy. I remember the next day not being able to move my arms. You just don't realize the impact of, yielding a lightsaber and, using your arms all day. But it was a lot of fun. I had so much fun doing that. You had another question, though. And I've
Samuel L. Jackson. Oh. My wife is a fan, so
yeah, who
I'm asking the question.
Who isn't a fan of Samuel L. Jackson? He was awesome. I mean, I was standing in... in the Jedi Council scene, and that was the only scene I was with him in, but we chatted quite a lot, and he actually ended up coming to a party that Mira Yaya, who played Illuminarian Dooley, had, and so she hosted a party. He went, I didn't, and I kind of regretted not going, because we didn't think he was going to turn up, but he did. So he's that down to earth that he'll turn up at little parties and things like that when he was filming. Because, they're in Australia for, a fair few months filming. I think my favorite part of working with him was when I asked him to recite his scene from Pulp Fiction. His scene at the end where he doesn't dig on swine, and he has this brilliant scene. And what was really interesting is when I asked him, he recited the whole thing to me. And he still remembered it, and I just thought that was really impressive. So that was one of my takes on working with him, is that he remembered his lines, he acted it out to me just because I asked, and I will always respect him for that as a person. So, yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
So what's one takeaway from working with the film that and the franchise itself? What, like, what did you take away from your experience in the movie?
That's actually a really good question. No one has ever asked me that question before, which is really good to get new questions. What's my one takeaway? Look, I'm incredibly lucky. I think we could all say we're very lucky and very blessed to have been in that in the films, in the saga of Star Wars. And I don't know, my life has pretty much changed, you know, since the film. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I might hand it over to these guys to answer that question because I'm really not sure what I took away from that. It was a brilliant experience. I made friends for life from that film. But, like, what did I take from that? I don't know, guys. I'm going
to
have
to. That was
a
great privilege to work in Star Wars. You know, I worked on three different things. I worked Star Wars, I worked in Planet of the Apes, and I worked Star Trek. All three big ones, you know. But Star Wars, it was really nice to be involved with a, you know, group of nice people. Like you said, you met so many friends. Mm-hmm. I did the same thing. I got to meet a lot of nice little people from in London, from the, you know, the Return of Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
If I was never invited, I would never been able to meet these wonderful people. Mm-hmm. So that's something that you really cherish the rest of your life, you know, because it's great, mm-hmm. you know, get to become friends with a lot of nice people, right? So, and then work with George Lucas, you know, I mean, you can't find any better. And Spielberg, mm-hmm. but, yeah. you know, well.
I think, you know, I'm a hippie. I might not look like one, but I still am. And my hair was as long as yours at one time.
Oh, really?
You know what I mean? Yeah.
You could have played Cousin It.
I could have played Cousin It, yeah. But here's, well. Yeah, here's him. But there was a book that was written back in the early 70s or the 60s, before you all were born, called Small is Beautiful. And it was sort of about, you know, putting meaning into our lives, which comes from just, you know, the right proportions, you know, as sort of an anti-corporate bureaucracy kind of thing. And so, you know, the notion that I think all of us that had migrated into the entertainment business was that we wanted to do things that were sort of non-commercial. I was based in the music scene and the theater scene in London. And so when I first started doing films, it was kind of not something that I wanted to gravitate into, but it was sort of underwriting this lifestyle that I had where small was beautiful. Well, Star Wars was a big budget operation, big corporate thing. When I got into it, which was the second film, Empire Strikes Back, and at that time, you know, it had a lot of money that was being thrown at it. And we all knew that it was a blockbuster, or would be, because it followed on the first Star Wars. And I wasn't really expecting anything other than a big corporate monstrosity, I want to say, you know? And what I was amazed was, as soon as I got involved in the film, I worked on it for 4 weeks, the morale was absolutely amazing. And my favorite story, which I know Felix has heard me tell, is one day arriving on the set, and the tea lady was there pushing her cart around. Well, the tea lady is sort of like in a film set. It's very hierarchical, right? And the tea lady is sort of at the bottom of the totem pole, like in the circus, the guy's sweeping up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Okay.
You know, I mean, it's a fact of life. I mean, you know, you have your producers that are these people that are larger than life, and then you have the salt of the earth, which is us folks that are the under five lines, and the tea lady. And the tea lady was pushing this cart around, and she was probably younger than I am now, but she seemed like she was a granny. And I'm 69, I don't mind saying it. And she just had this beatific smile. And she was pushing the cart around, and to everybody that she was offering a cup of tea to, she says, "Hello, darling. You all right, then? You having fun? Isn't it lovely?" She was the happiest person that was generating this mood, okay? The thing about it is that mood gets generated from the top down. Anybody that's in a union, how many people are in a union in here, okay? Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, right? It, you know, you're looking out to see that, you know, are you getting done by the management and what have you? You want it, you know, because, boy, you're going to check, you know, work to rule and all this kind of stuff. There was none of that at Star Wars. And I attribute that actually to Gary Kurtz and George Lucas and the choices they made, which resulted in the people that you worked with and that you worked with and I worked with. Everybody, you know, really wanted to do the right thing for the people they were working with. And the same thing was true with the belief that they had in what George was putting together. I could go on and on about this, but I think the proof of the pudding is in the eating, which you've heard from the three of us, I hope, is that, you know, we were ennobled and our lives were made greater just by being associated with this thing. I mean, I worked on 8 films, and they were all great experiences, and I have to say my favorite film that I worked on was A Bridge Too Far, but the mood that Star Wars had was something awesome. And as a result, a lot of us are here on the circuit today to kind of share that with you, just to let you know that, hey, it was real. And if we didn't feel that way, we wouldn't be out here. Yeah. You know, it's just, and I love getting together with these folks, and, you know, I hope we'll work together again, yeah, because being out here kind of continues that and seeing the joy that we're able to share with you. So. You nailed it.
When
it's a community.
I saw your name on the list, I said, how can I miss it? I have to go and see my friend again, you know, because we did a panel together in
Wilmington.
Wilmington, yeah, with the retired Wonder Woman, remember?
Oh, yeah, she was.
We really enjoyed to be together, and it's been fun. I mean, it's really been wonderful. My life has been terrific, you know, since I didn't go look for, you know, to mm-hmm. work in a movie. They came and they found me in California. I didn't know anything about it, about movies, nothing. I moved from the circus to L.A. I went to work for some company there, and they came in looking for me, and that's how I got started out, doing stunt work for little kids. So mm-hmm. that's what the money was, and that's what's paying a wonderful you know, we had a decent pension. It pays the bills, It's been a wonderful, you know, wonderful trip, whatever you want to call it. It's I enjoyed it. So, whatever you said, you were exactly right. I mean,
we were all very fortunate, you know, because we had good, successful careers beforehand. I mean, I was a West End actor in London, which is like being on Broadway, and Nalimi is, you know, an actress from Australia, and she was well-known in Australia before she came into Star Wars. So we were all doing successful and wonderful things that our immediate circle were aware of, but with Star Wars, we got kind of catapulted into this phenomenon that we're all a part of, including the fans. But you all don't know about what we did before, or in many cases after. But it's that little piece of Star Wars that kind of has transformed the three of our lives.
You know, John, when Lucas went to Universal Studio to ask about, you know, he wanted to do the movie Star Wars, and they say, what is Star Wars? What is this? I mean, now they're still biting their fingernails, so we wish we had it.
Yeah.
You know, because they refused it. They didn't want nothing to do with Star Wars. They didn't know what they were talking about. You know, they didn't want to listen to him. And then 20th Century Fox picked it up, and now Disney's enjoying it, and Lucas enjoyed a few billions. And we enjoy ours, and so everything has been fun. But Universal refused it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they did refuse it. They were offered. Wow. As a matter of fact, Lucas had a beautiful building at Universal, right across from Universal Studio, and there were like a casting for studio work. One day, a couple of attorneys from Universal went across and said, we want to buy the building. And they didn't even know who they were talking to. And the guy says, you know what? The building is not for sale, but I would like to go cross street. I want to buy the studio. And they couldn't figure out who he was talking to. So then they realized they were talking to George Lucas because he had more money than, you know. So that's goes to show you, what they did. I mean, but I think it's really, it's been a wonderful thing. We've been involved.
Yes,
And I just want to add to that about George Lucas. I mean, you asked me about one of the biggest takeaways, and he really does create that sense of community, but he's just such a down-to-earth person. And I think that, you know, and if you look at Hollywood, it's very easy to see that certain people have reputations and, you know, have a certain, maybe a different kind of take on their, you know, their entitlement that they have once they become a celebrity, or if they're a director, an executive producer, or producer, whatever it might be. But I don't think you'd ever meet anyone as down-to-earth as George Lucas. Incredibly nice, kind-hearted. He actually even, we had a party at the end of filming, so we had a wrap-up party, and he invited all the actors, and he was walking around with this massive bodyguard, and everyone was too intimidated to go up to him, and I went up to him and I said, thank you very much for giving us the opportunity, and thank you for running this party. You didn't have to do this. And his bodyguard was on the side going, does your friend know George Lucas? Which, a bit silly, really, but, you know, he was asking the question anyway. But then people started to talk to him. But the fact that he did that shows that he's not like other people in the industry. I think that sometimes, you know, it pays to be incredibly kind and down to earth. And no matter how much money you have, or no matter how much you've created, that you still just are like everybody else in terms of, you know, we're all humans. And he kind of really doesn't, I think he tries to instill that in anything that he works on. So that's why there's that sense of community, and that's why everyone's really happy to work with him. And he's not a difficult person to work with in any way, and it would be very difficult to be difficult around him because it's just so nice. So for those who don't know him, he's just so incredible.
You know, I found him kind of shy.
Yes.
He's not he's a very nice guy, very nice person, but he's the type of man that you cannot stop saying, you just say hello to him and whatever, but he won't stop saying, I'll have a conversation with you. He's a very busy guy, but he's very friendly, but he just say good morning, good night, whatever, good afternoon, and that's it. But he does not, Spielberg is a different story. Spielberg, he could talk to you for a day if he's not doing anything. You know, he told me one time when we were doing the Indiana Jones in London, we were early in the set, and he said, he looked at me and says, hey, Felix, if you were this much shorter, I could use you in my second ET. And I'm still waiting. You know, I mean, the second ET is never going to come. But that's how Spielberg is compared to... They're two different persons. They're two different human beings. One is really friendly, is shy. The other one is very friendly and likes to talk. So.
Well, we have, you know, really kind of different generations here of Star Wars actors. So, John, you want to start? And if you want to talk about, I guess, how you see maybe the newer movies versus your experience with Empire Strikes Back. And then, Felix, you can talk about Return of the Jedi as... kind of that follow-up, because, you know, you had so much, it really was different, because, with Star Wars, that was the trial, you know, the first movie, you know, nobody really knew what to expect, but with Empire Strikes Back, they're like, oh, okay, now we've seen that first one, we want to see the second one, and the third one was just such a big, you know, here's the finale, and then, Nalini, with yours, I mean, it was like, now we're coming back to something, and if you would just each talk about your experiences and how you feel about maybe the newer movies compared to what you did.
I think the original trilogy, the two that were around being produced when I was in the business in London, was still drawing on technology and skills that were on a human scale. And one of the things, the studio where the first two were made was called Elstree, Boreham Wood. And that's where Stanley Kubrick had done 2001, and he lived actually just down the road, and he was doing The Shining, which I was also in, at the same time as Lucas was doing Empire Strikes Back. The men and women that were involved in Empire Strikes Back, many of them had worked with Stanley Kubrick on 2001, and so it was model shops, puppeteers. The Tauntauns were these huge puppets that were on casters with these levers 6 feet behind the tail, where, you know, the puppet master was, you know, making the Tauntaun move with these levers and cables. like this. So you were able to sort of see that old technology that was traditional, that, that went back to the beginning of filmmaking in England, which was very much a guild kind of thing where you had men and women who were beautiful craftspersons that could do things, you know, that, that they had learned in their apprenticeships. So it was, it had a human scale to it.
Right now, what they use,
and that's different today.
You know, right now what they use is CGI, like a computer. You know, like a, let's say about the computer. When we did a Buck Rogers in 1979, we didn't have the technology they have now. If we had the technology then, like we have now, Buck Rogers would still be running somewhere, you know. But everything has gone to CGI. Not only they do it really quick, but it puts a lot of people out of work.
Mm.
You know, they could put 1,000 stormtroopers in the background, and there's nobody there to get, you know, nobody's getting a paycheck, and people are going to unemployment office. So they got to show you the, like you say, about the people pushing things.
Yeah.
You know, it's different right now. It's and it didn't get any better. It's
but isn't The Force Awakens, haven't they come to a balance? Because they went heavy over on CGI in your films.
Yes, they did. They did. I don't know. I mean, I think that, I mean, in terms of CGI, I mean, you think, yeah, episode 1, 2, and 3 had this amazing CGI work, but then, you know, they weren't as popular as the first three. You know, there was something lacking, I think, in the next three, and there was some sort of disconnect. I'm sure many of you in the audience probably agree. There was this disconnect in the next three to the first three, and we could blame it on the CGI, we could blame it on the storyline. You know, they didn't have the same actors. And then I think that when Lucas got all that feedback, I think they, that, and it was sold off to Disney, I think Disney kind of knew that and really wanted to make sure they set the tone right. So all the original actors are in it, and it's still got CGI. But the storyline, you know, it was very action-filled.
Mm.
Whereas we knew the first three were really about how do these characters come to be. So, you know, it wasn't really about the action. It was about less. But I think that from all the, you know, the actors, that were the audience that grew up with it, were expecting something very different. So, you know, it was kind of like a hit and miss. It wasn't expected. And I remember, you know, hearing this interview from George saying he just was really surprised that people reacted that way, because this was Star Wars. You know, this was Star Wars, and he wasn't expecting that kind of reaction. So, you know, CGI or not, I mean, there was a lot of CGI in our films, and I think by the time it got to episode 3, I think it was, you know, it was quite good. But, you know, was it Jar Jar Binks in episode 1 that, you know, kind of, you know, really didn't sell the film? Or was it the CGI? Was it storyline? I mean, who really knows?
Yeah.
I mean, there's different generations that watched each of them. And, you know, I'm sure there's those that like the, you know, the middle three. And then those who really loved the first three. And then those who really loved episode 7. So, you know, I've seen all of them, you know. And, I mean, I've got my favorites, too. And I'm sure if you ask different people, they all have their own favorites. But yeah, I mean, the film was heavily CGI and more storyline based, even though it was done how many years later? Like 30 years?
'98, '99.
Yeah, so like a good 20, you know, 1 year later from the originals.
Okay, well, let's talk about that, your favorite Star Wars movies.
Yeah, everyone asks me that, and I'm like, well, I really can't choose, but I really like the Ewok Adventures. I'm sorry, but I'm just like, I just really am sold on the Ewok Adventures. I mean, I used to watch the, you know, the originals on, the first three on TV, the repeats, and so, you know, I'd also watch the Ewok Adventures as a child, the repeats on TV, and I have to say, I just kind of really just kind of had an affinity with those little creatures. So, yeah, it's my favorite.
I don't know which one is my favorite. I think the Return of Jedi wasn't. You know what, tell you the truth, I didn't even see too many films. I didn't have a chance to see the last one. And pretty soon, what, a couple more weeks, another one's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really like to go and see things. I haven't been in a theater for the past 40 years. Because right now, not really much to go see anyway. But anyway, the reason I said the Return of Jedi, because I helped a stunt coordinator find some little people that I knew that could do the job to do stunt work. Because everybody kept telling me when we were rehearsing on the location, hey, Felix, can you get me in? I said, well, what do you mean to get you in? The reason they were asking me, because they want to become involved with the union, that way you could get a little more money. Because the people in the background, they would only get $100 a day. And some of them just fall asleep. Really, I've seen it. Some of the people, they just lay down and fall asleep while we're filming because you blend with the, you know, with the leaves and the redwoods. You don't even see the difference. All the costumes are almost the same color. You just lay down and nobody, as long as you don't move, nobody knows you're sleeping. Could be a rock, could be anything. But everybody kept coming to me. They want to know if I could help him in, you know, to get into the Screen Actor Guild because they pay more money. You get a residual check. My first residual check, I had to call the company to make sure that if it was real. I don't want to cash it. I said, I have to call them. I called the people of production in San Francisco, whatever. And I said, look, I got the check. Is this real? Can I cash? Oh, yeah, no problem. Cash it. So I didn't want to, 2 weeks later, come back to me and say, hey, we give you too much money. You know, send it back to us. But it was really wonderful. And I had a lot of fun doing the show. I really enjoyed it. And it was such a great thing to be involved with. You know? So that's my favorite.
John, how about you?
Yeah.
I liked Empire Strikes Back. I think that in terms of all the balance in terms of the storyline and the arc and the directing that Irving Kirshner did was pretty good. He was able to bring out a lot of emotions. But there are other features in all of the films that I think are interesting. You know, I love the costumes of Princess Amidala and and some of the landscapes. You know, I guess it was that Alderaan. You know, with the waterfalls where she was from?
Naboo,
yeah. Oh, gosh. I mean, you know, that was really transportive. I mean, I love that. So that worked for me. And that was CGI, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, that worked for me. And then in The Force Awakens, people say, well, this is a rehash of A New Hope. Well, yeah, but it's still pretty good because it has that balance that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. And what I say to people is pretty much the same as I think what George thinks, is that, you know, depending on your age and when you first enter Star Wars, that will be your favorite film. And what The Force Awakens does is it tells that epical, or what's the word, mythical tale, which was all part of that Joseph Campbell hero's journey that was the same as what he was telling in Star Wars New Hope. As the father of two daughters, it just so happens that the hero is a woman. I can buy that because I want that figure that, you know, Daisy Ridley portrays as being something that's going to inspire my two daughters. So that's fine with me, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's a great tale. I'm looking forward to Episode 8. I don't know what Rogue One's going to be like, but I imagine it's going to be pretty good, you know? And, you know, it's really interesting how it all has migrated as we've all advanced in history.
We can take a couple questions from the audience.
Okay. Well, this is really more of a statement and a question. So we all know that you mentioned the circuit, right, coming out. And we appreciate you guys all being here. This is awesome. The big show, April, Orlando, celebration.
Oh, the celebration.
Yeah. Well, my question is, well, can we see you there? And then my second kind of a comment is, you mentioned the division between the original trilogy and the prequels and what. I think celebrations beyond the petty bickering of the common people and the fans all there want to see original trilogy, prequel trilogy, as well as the newer ones, just as much equally. I don't care. So I hope we see you, and my question is, will we see you, or can you speak about it?
I honestly don't know whether you will see me in particular. I don't know about the two of you, but I don't think we've heard anything as yet as to the guest list. I think we're still waiting to hear. I think when they had the one in England recently, the guest list was very, it was kind of drawn very last minute. So
it seemed to be smaller.
Yeah, of course.
You can't just volunteer and say, I'm on Star Wars, can I come to the party?
Yeah, I think that they're in talks about that. I don't know if anyone's heard more, John.
I haven't heard anything about it. You have to be invited, first thing, and
yeah.
If you don't get invited, you're not going to be there. I've done three of them, so The last one I did, the one is Los Angeles in Anaheim, California. There was about 150,000 people in 4 days. And you have to, like I said, you have to get invited. If they invite you, I'll be glad to be there. Just send me my ticket, I'll be there.
Well, I did episode one. I did celebration one in Denver, and then I did five and six and Essen in Germany and Anaheim. So I guess I've done five. Now, with the exception of the first celebration, all of the subsequent ones were licensed out to this group called Official Picks, which was in.
Texas,
yeah. Yeah, in Dallas. And when Disney bought the franchise, then that all changed, and so that Official Picks doesn't have the franchise for, you know, booking the celebrities for the, you know, the autograph hall. And so what happened, as I understand it, and, you know, we were talking about this actually before the convention started today, is that without the Official Picks, somebody, Disney or Lucasfilm, was trying to manage, you know, who the celebrities were that they were going to invite. And I guess they were able, because of the cost considerations, to get a lot of the people that were still in England to show up, and but they weren't prepared to bring us over like they were able to do or were willing to do for Essen, for example, or I guess probably the Star Wars celebration in London.
Yeah, I never went there.
Whenever that was.
Yeah.
So I don't know that they've worked this out. And last night, my wife and I were having dinner with Jim Lucino, James Lucino, and Jimmy actually said to you that he was going, right? So, but that is worked out through Penguin Random House and the Lucasfilm Book Division. So I think that whatever that package is all done differently than us actors. So I imagine you're going to see a lot of the Star Wars authors there. If they're going to get Jim, they're going to get others that are out there that are writing the contemporary. Now, Lucino's book is the companion to Rogue One, and he talked a little bit about that book last night with us, which was kind of interesting. I can't really go into it, but well, what I can say that was kind of interesting is that he had to do a little bit of a rewrite. This is off the record, okay? There's no, wait a minute. No.
Yeah, don't.
Actually, no. I realize.
Okay, my lawyer will be in your
No, I don't want to go there. Sorry. I'm so sorry.
Lucas is not going to do anything about it, but Disney might do something about it.
I beg your pardon. I hadn't realized we're being. This is for a podcast.
Yeah,
so.
Anyway,
you're just joking.
Whatever, it's going to be good. I just wanted to impress you with how much I know on the inside, which is zero.
Well, let's.
I don't want to go down there again.
Let's hope we get invited for the celebration in Orlando.
Yeah, I like to be there.
I've done three of them.
It
one in Orlando and two in California, and I'd love to do it, you know. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to bring Jack and Jesse Jensen, two brothers that were in the film. Yeah, they're amazing. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, any other questions from the group?
Question. I don't know if anyone or any of you have seen one of the latest Netflix documentaries, I Am Your Father, with David Prowse, kind of George Lucas thing. I was wondering if anybody could maybe shed a little light on that. Have you any comments on that, or if you can even list them?
I didn't know that either.
We get Netflix. What's it called?
It's called I Am Your Father, and it's on David Prowse, kind of the division between Lucasfilms and David Prowse over a few different things.
Okay. Does he know about that?
I believe he declined to be interviewed for the documentary, so I guess he does have some knowledge of it.
Yeah.
You saw
it. Very good. Yeah.
Who
actually recreates the scene at the end of Return of the Jedi that he really probably should have been in from the beginning
when they take the helmet off.
So you don't get to see that, unfortunately, because they wouldn't give him the rights to refilm it. But they went ahead and did it anyway in the private screening. So it'd be nice to see that.
Who refused to be interviewed? I know you said
George Lucas.
Oh, George Lucas. Yeah, right. Yeah, that's no surprise there. So, okay, we'll have to check that out.
Yeah, check it out. Very good. If anyone's interested,
I am your father. Okay.
Okay, and you had a question?
This is actually on to you. Because I know those two, they kind of like play, I guess in a sense, minor characters, but for you, you're actually one of the major characters. And, like, how was it as a dark side character versus a light side character?
Well, it's interesting you should say a light side character because my character goes dark in the Clone Wars comic, in the Clone Wars TV show. So I actually liked playing the good side. I really did. I think that, you know, just generally speaking, I fight for the good, not for the bad. I don't know, it was fun. I mean, I don't know, you know, it was fun playing with a lightsaber and fun being a Jedi because I don't think that there were many female Jedis in the first three. So to be one of the very, you know, very little handful of Jedis that they had was like a real privilege, you know, and they made the character so magnificent. I mean, she had so many abilities. So it's kind of a shame that, you know, when it came to Clone Wars that she turned into this character that was just atypical of someone who's just corrupt and is corrupted, which is not really who she is.
Yeah, much like what happened with Anakin Skywalker.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, they filled her as a traitor at the end, and you don't really know her outcome at the end of it. You know, everyone thought she might be in the Rebels, but she wasn't. And, yeah, I mean, she was an amazing character. And even with each of the different female Jedis that they had, you know, Amy Allen, who played Aayla Secura, Shakti, played by Ildi Shoshan, Illuminari Unduli, who's my master, played by Mary Oyaya, each of us had our own very, you know, kind of like, you know, very defined, you know, very defined characteristics. And I think that George Lucas paid a lot of attention to that. And so, you know, the characters get a lot of attention, you know, at the same time as a result of that. But you know, it was fun. I mean, it was fun because, yes, I played the good side, but it wasn't just that. It was the fact that I was a Jedi and it was a female Jedi, which was kind of, I think, something that people were really looking for. They're like, where are the females in this? You know, it's all the males, you know. Well, let's get some female power in there. So, yeah, I've got to say, I was pretty, like, happy to have been, you know, one of those females. Yeah.
Well, we're coming down to the last 10 minutes or so. So, do you guys have any final words for the folks?
I want to say thank you for you guys for coming. And yeah, if it wasn't for you guys, we wouldn't be have a chance to be here. I mean, the fans that you know, they make the movies, right? So.
Yeah. I was going to add to that as well, because, I mean, you know, and we could probably all attest to this, that, you know, Star Wars has, you know, any of the films you do, if they have a big following, it always changes your life. But you can say a movie changes your life, but I don't think it's so much the movie. I think it's always the fans, because the fans will control anything, how popular a movie is, whether the next movie comes out. But if it weren't for the fans, yeah, you know, we wouldn't be here at all, doing shows, you know, week after week, month after month, year after year. So thank you very much for being here. So we give a little, like, applause to you all.
Yeah. And you know what, Star Wars thing, I've done so much filming. Well, what we film is, you know, The Return of Jedi. And when I went to look at the film, I said, what happened? Mm-hmm. What happened to all the stuff that we did, all the stuff that we filmed? Was barely, a little bit, they just put a little bit on it. If you blink your eyes, you lost it. And there was nothing in there. But we filmed for 3-4 weeks. And we did a lot of nice things, but, you know, we did a lot of some funny stuff. I don't think Lucas liked it because he figured it was, maybe it was too much comedy. But other than that, I didn't realize what I just couldn't figure out why. We did so much. We filmed so much. We worked so hard, and all of a sudden, it's all gone. But I'm pretty sure they have it somewhere in that reel.
Mm-hmm.
Someday, somebody's going to see it. So it goes to show you how much you put so much hard work, and then you go look at it and you don't even see yourself. You barely see yourself. So, you know, it's you know, you work hard and then you don't, you know, I don't know what to do with it. And you're not falling asleep, are you, John?
No, I'm just contemplating what you had to say.
I'm glad you were so...
You did say I think,
you know, it's a collaborative art.
Yes.
Which answers your question about David Prowse. You know, if we lose sight that film as a collaborative art, then we get our, you get in trouble, because then we start thinking in terms of our ego. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you know, the, it, how Darth Vader was conceived and executed in, you know, using David, because, I mean, he, you know, as a young man, he was a magnificent body. I mean, he was, you know, Mr. Universe for, you know, England. But he had a West Country British voice that was on the treble side, you know. He had a lot of top and not much bottom. And so you had this image that only James Earl Jones could fill. I mean, really, you know. I mean, the voice of Dak that you hear is not my voice, okay? But if you go to Superman 2, you're going to hear my voice. And the only reason why that happened was because I happened to be available when they wanted to do the looping, the dubbing of my character's voice. And so I was able to go down to the studio and get it looped. Whereas all of the minor characters, as you put it, in the case of those of us that were working in London, all the post-production and the looping was done in Los Angeles. Well, they're not going to fly John Morton over to do one line. Mm-hmm. It makes no sense. And who knows John Morton's real voice anyway? Who cares? Let's get some guy, you know, who is a voice actor professional in Los Angeles who we know has the chops that can do the dubbing, and that's how that worked.
You know who it was?
No. Nope. But I tell you who I did find out, if I may take a review. At Celebration 6, a Norwegian guy came up to me and he says, "Hey, you know, Mr. Morton, I think I know the guy who played Dak in the snowspeeder scene in Finza." Well, this guy played Dak before I did, because they shot that scene when the AT-AT steps on him. And I heard from this guy on Facebook about three weeks ago, who had, he said, "Hey, do you remember I told you, well, here's this guy's email address, he'd like to hear from you." So this guy, his name is Ecker. I sent him an email a couple of weeks ago saying, "Hey, you got to come out on the circuit. Hey, if the fans want to see all the Boba Fetts, you know, they're going to want to see all the Daks. So come on and join us, man."
I didn't realize that wasn't you in the...
No.
Wow. So, asking how you like Norway.
Film is a collaborative art, folks. Don't let it go to your heads.
Yeah.
Share the wealth and the fun. Anyway.
Okay. Well, we really appreciate you guys taking time out of your busy schedules to come here, for one thing, and to talk to us about your great experiences with Star Wars. So, anything else from fans? Okay. Well, all right. Well,
thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Again, that was comicbook.com's panel with the moderator from comicbook.com, Aaron Clutter, and his guests, John Morton, Natalini Christian, and Felix Cilia. Again, I want to thank Aaron and the folks from comicbook.com for allowing us to record their panel. I can't thank them there enough for it. Check their website out, and we'll provide links to everybody's social media, if anything, and we'll provide a link to Aaron's site, comicbook.com, in our show description. As always, we could be found on iTunes, Google Play Music, our website, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. If you have any questions, you could email us at longcoatmafia@gmail.com, or you can message us on Facebook by going to facebook.com/thelongcoatmafiapodcast. We do have a Twitter and Instagram account. Both those handles are Longcoat Mafia. Speaking of iTunes, prior, a few seconds ago, please like, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. It does help us a little bit. Again, we hope you for those of you who went to the Winter Pop and Comic Wonderland Expo in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania, you had a good time. If you didn't go, there is going to be an awesome April show this 23rd and 24th, I think. Stay tuned to the 4stateretrocon.com website. Again, I'll probably put a link in the description for that. Either way, take care. Go to the website, comicbook.com website. Go to our website. Go to our social media. That's about it. Oh, yeah. Go watch Star Wars. Or I should say, go watch Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. And hopefully next year when we do our next Hostful, we'll do a review of that movie.
It's shocking, humiliating, and it's unacceptable.
Oh, come on. It's a classic. The only show in the world that gets better the more it's rerun.
Do I get a choice?
No! No!
Screw you guys. I'm going home.
Okay, people, move along. There's nothing to see here.